The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 321 of the Columbia Calling podcast. We are still in lockdown and in quarantine here in Colombia. I hope wherever you are listening, you are well, you are healthy, you are staying healthy, more importantly, and those around you, friends and loved ones, neighbors, everyone are well and healthy as well, because it's an important time in this, in 2020 and in the world. You'll see an article I wrote on Medium about my thoughts, and of course, last week there was an earthquake. You know that I talk about my places in Mompós, in Bolívar, the García Márquez backwater, colonial backwater, where there was a 5.7 earthquake last week. And that would have put an end to everything had the buildings fallen down. Anyway, I wrote that on Medium. You can find it, Richard McCall. This week, we've got a very special guest on the show. In fact, he's the first of a kind for me, because I really don't understand this topic. And it's he's an influencer and a YouTuber. Of course, that means he's a couple of generations younger than I. But his name's Zach Morris. He has upwards of 900,000 subscribers on YouTube. His videos routinely hit the 1 million mark or over. There's some incredibly popular ones and quite cerebral ones. I mean, more than you would think, in truth. So we'll have Zach on in the final segment of this show from on the line in Cali, talking to us about how he fell into being a YouTuber and what it really means to be an influencer and a YouTuber, and how do you make any money from it? It all just seems to be freebies. I'm 43. I don't understand this stuff. Well, my big thank you goes out to the former interviewees on this show. Toby Muse's show from last week, 320, about his book Kilo, a follow-up on episode 302, has been incredibly popular indeed. And I know that there's many of you out there who've bought the book Kilo. And so thank you for that. We have to support one another, not only now, but always, especially those of us doing something, somewhat a bit creative and obviously not always expecting a great return on the efforts. So Toby Muse's episode was very, very good. And of course, prior to that, we had the Quarantine Chronicles with Peter Dale, writer, and that's been very popular as well. His Instagram TV has taken off on the Quarantine Chronicles. And then prior to that, of course, it was Women for Conservation up there, and Isabella Lara Cortez talked to us, and I got some very nice emails and messages. And in fact, one of my listeners said he made his 15-year-old daughter listen to that one to teach her to live life under her own rules. So that's it's pretty flattering stuff to hear that we've been able to influence. Like an influencer, we've been able to sort of, maybe change some people's perceptions at this time. Well, I'm going to take a break and we'll be back with we'll put the news segment with Adrian Alsima and Columbia Reports. And then, of course, Zach Morris, YouTuber, influencer, and native of South Carolina, who will be on the line with us from Cali, Colombia. So don't go away, and thank you for listening.
My name is Adrian Alsima, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for April 21, 2020. President Ivan Duque wants to lift Colombia's quarantine for much of the working population, but received no support from government and mayors. The government wants to maintain the quarantine for the elderly and students, but relax restrictions for much of the labor force. Bogota Mayor Claudia Lopez says she would maintain a local quarantine, with the exception of the construction sector and bicycle repair shops. The government's idea to lift the quarantine further increased tensions with the country's medical community and scientists. A top epidemiologist who was cited by Health Minister Fernando Ruiz to justify the relaxation said Ruiz twisted her words and she warned there is still a long way to go. The Colombian Medical Federation withdrew its confidence in the minister and said hospitals have yet to receive basic personal protection equipment that would protect health workers. The country's health system has begun collapsing under the weight of the growing number of infections by the coronavirus. The main hospital in the western Chocó province was forced to all but shut down after an outbreak among personnel forced the government to send almost all doctors and nurses home. In Pereira, another major hospital was closed after 34 health workers tested positive for the virus. Several universities have designed and developed respirators that are expected to be needed when the virus infects large parts of the population. The first was the University of Antioquia, which was able to successfully develop and test the complex machine. Because the projects are open source, factories throughout the country are now able to mass produce the ventilators. Until the crisis, Colombia didn't have the technology to produce ventilators, but was dependent on imports. Colombia's prison system is under pressure after the coronavirus was confirmed in Bogotá, Villavicencio, and Florencia. The government issued a decree to release prisoners, but is yet unable to effectively do so. Meanwhile, tensions and fear among the prison population is growing as the overcrowded and unhygienic prisons are virtual petri dishes for any disease. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is the final segment of episode 321 of the Colombia Calling podcast. As you know, I'm Richard McCall, your host here in Bogota, Colombia, in the lockdown. And my very special guest this week is Zach Morris. Now, Zach is originally from South Carolina, from a place called West Columbia. And so he's traded West Columbia, South Carolina for Cali, Colombia. And he is quite the influencer and the YouTuber. He's even like, well, we'll get into his singing career as well. Welcome on Colombia Calling, Zach. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Hey, well, Richard, I'm really glad that you invited me, and I'm excited. My dad's going to hear me speak in English for once, so he's a big listener to your show, so I'm pretty excited to be here.
That's really cool, and I love the fact that I've got a listener in Kentucky. I had no idea. But Zach, I mean, yours is a fascinating story. But before we launch into sort of a few of the background details, let's just find out. I mean, You are a psychology major from the university. You've worked in construction in Canada, and now you're in Cali, Colombia, obviously in quarantine because we know what's going on at the moment. But how did you end up? I mean, how did you end up deciding, well, I'm going to do a YouTube channel, and it's a YouTube channel that's so amazingly in favor of Colombia. You've probably done more than, and you know, more than the, like the government promotion arm in four short years than they have in 20 years. So tell us a little bit of how you fell into this, or how you, you know, channeled your life into this.
Yeah, for sure, man. It was a pretty organic, like, it was, I watched YouTube, like when I was like in college and stuff, I'd watch like interviews of people and stuff like that. But I never was like, oh man, I really want to be a YouTuber. I was actually very inspired to become a writer when I first went to on my South American Odyssey, if you would call. But yeah, I was just totally immersed with Colombia. I had a girlfriend in Colombia, and I was doing a I was working with the government in a project of bilingualizing the schools, and I had this intensely immersive about a year of my life in Colombia before I started doing YouTube, and it just kind of like YouTube was kind of like a result of that. I was using YouTube as a means to promote a travel company I was trying to start. I was actually trying to be a writer, but then like my presence on YouTube just, it kind of was like overwhelmingly like successful compared to everything else that I'd ever tried. So it was kind of like, I never wanted YouTube to be like the final destination, but then I started making money off some of the videos and I was like, well, you know, this isn't what I imagined, but it ain't too bad, you know? So I went for it.
That's really cool. I mean, you've been on this, you've had a YouTube channel and it says that nice title at the top, you know, Un Colombiano Más. You've got Colombian nationality now. We'll come into that in a second. But what was the, let's say, I know it's an organic growth over 4 years, but what was the video or the film that you made or the clip that you made that really was the one that sort of tipped you over the edge and said, I can do this?
So it was a slight progression. I got to give credit where credit's due. I had a Colombian girlfriend and I was still being a writer in those days that I had the Colombian girlfriend, and I made a video I made a blog post at the time about like 7 perks of having a Colombian girlfriend. And so I made that in English and I also wrote it in Spanish just for fun. And so I wrote it in Spanish and I got this huge response like that I never would have ever expected from like, you know, Colombian people that definitely didn't know who I was. It kind of like just organically, like compared to anything else that I'd ever written, it kind of took off. And so I made videos of her showing me how to dance and her like taking me to eat at like a typical food place. And those videos, they got like, you know, 3,000 views. For me at the time, I was like, you know, that was like wild, like, you know, insane to imagine. And so that was kind of like the first primer, I guess, you know, that was like the primer. And then I continued on that same path that I was doing to promote my travel company, which, you know, still hasn't really taken off, through YouTube videos. And one day I was just like, well, you know, the dollar's really high right now. Let me make a video about what you can eat with $5 at a food festival here in Colombia, because there's one going on and I had $5 to spare. And so I went down to the food festival and I stuffed my face for about an hour and I recorded everything that I ate for about $5. And it sat on the internet for about 6 months. And then one day I woke up and it had 28,000 views and I was like, wow, 28,000 views. And then by the end of the second day, it was up to 500,000. And I was like, well, this must be what crack feels like, because, you know, I'd refresh the page every second and look at the views. And it was just like, it was beyond my belief that I could be like making money and like growing, just like growing my, whatever my cause was at the time, just sitting on my couch. So that was the big push was, me eating, stuffing my face with, Colombian street foods for about 6 minutes, on YouTube. That was the big push that really got me, started.
Amazing. Isn't it? Wow. Now you've mentioned it a couple of times. You say making an income. Now I'm 43 years old. I'm too old to understand way of life. How do you make an income? Don't give me your secrets. Don't give everyone out there your secrets. But I mean, what you can live off what you're making as a YouTuber.
Yes. Yes. Now that is keeping in mind the following. You can always, let's say, like I can always anticipate a certain amount that is not desirable, but it's you know, it's sufficient. I can always anticipate that I can make that certain amount of money. But if I work really hard and I get, you know, and I make a lot of videos and they are seen by a lot of people, I can, you know, I can have the possibility of living really well. You know, that's through YouTube and that's also through Facebook. I now upload my videos to Facebook because Facebook also monetizes videos, and that's also through Google's AdSense program. Essentially, every video that I make, there's an opportunity to monetize it by posting ads at some location on the video. And so I'll post an ad on like every 3 minutes on a video of 10 minutes. I'll have like 3 ads And if that video gets, you know, 100,000 views, then I can anticipate a certain amount of income, which is enough that I need. And
it's amazing.
It's the income, because that's least complicated. But you can also work with brands and do, you know, sponsorships and stuff like that. But that's not a constant income that I count on. It's always a perk, but it's never something that I can rely upon.
Yeah, and especially in these times now, I think people are cutting back now. But that, I mean, that's fascinating. You hear of people wanting to become influencers, want to be YouTubers, and my friend's kid wants to be a YouTuber and stuff. And I say, you know, what's that mean? Anyway, so you do. It's really cool. You make an income of it, and I mean, that'd be, my hat goes off to you. And I looked at your YouTube channel; it's 921,000 subscribers. So, I mean, you know, and I guess what's happened over the last couple of generations is, you know, people don't watch movies as much; they watch series now, that and lots of streaming because of all the, we look at Netflix, Amazon Prime, Apple TV, etc., etc., and of course YouTube. And you know, I watch my son who's 5; he doesn't want to sit down and watch a movie. They've got this sort of attention disorder for that. They want short clips of things, and so I mean, YouTube has completely occupied that section of their life. And so I can see where you fit in with this kind of thing. And I just think, I mean, so yeah, okay. So 2013, you moved here. This has all come into itself. You're making money, which again, I'm impressed with. Now, we met really, really briefly at the Anato sort of big tourism fair here earlier in the year, but really briefly, you were brought there by the Gobernación de Bolívar. So the state of Bolívar brought you to the Anato travel fair. How does that work? I mean, they buy you the flight from Cali, and they put you up in a hotel, and then say, you know, be nice to everyone and record a video here at Anato about us.
Yeah, that was actually that was probably not the most successful ad campaign that I've ever done, because I agreed to make a post on my Instagram, a dedicated post on my Instagram, which usually I like to make at least like, you know, $1,000 off of. But then I realized I was essentially like giving myself away. I was promoting that festival for Bolivar, which I don't mind, because, you know, I'm all about promoting tourism within Colombia. I think it's just good for the country, and I think it's good for people that come here. But I also like that was not my best. We kind of didn't really end on the most happier notes, because I was kind of upset, because like at the end of the day, the hotel that I was expecting, a Hilton, but I didn't. There was no contract involved. It was kind of like, hey, I'll buy you some flights, and then you come up and like make a picture on your Instagram and like hang out with us. And I was like, all right, well, sounds good. And then in hindsight, it was one of those things that you should have had a contract, but you didn't. So you just kind of had to follow through with it. But, yeah, it's essentially like people will, you know, they'll hit you up on Instagram or they'll send you an email, and you can tell right away when someone actually has a budget and actually has a, you know, means to, you know, support you, or when they're actually just like, you know, throwing, you know, shots in the air, firing shots in the air, whatever you call it. But I got in touch with the head of tourism in Bolivar, and you know, he was just like, yeah, we can make it work, and what do you want? And I was just like, you know, I just didn't think about asking money for my time. I just wanted a hotel, which I should have, you know, I guess made a little bit clear that, you know, I had higher standards than the hotel that I stayed at. But,
they put you in a 25,000 peso hotel a night.
Yeah, I could have done better on my own budget, but yeah, these things happen.
Well, I just find, again, for me, it's fascinating. And I see you there, you were in a constant, I don't know, you were a constant hit. Certainly a lot of young ladies looking to take photos with you is what I could see.
Oh yeah. Well, I had no idea what was waiting for me at Anato. I like, they told me about it, and I was just like, all right, that sounds cool. And I had no concept of what was waiting for me, but it's a huge event. It was, you know, everybody from Colombia was there with, you know, their best offerings. It was actually I got a little bit claustrophobic near the end there, because, you know, in the tourism community, I'm very recognized more so than anywhere else. So it was like, that's the most like a celebrity I've ever felt, because I literally, there was a point where like, I didn't want any more pictures to be taken, just cause I wanted to, you know, like breathe for a bit.
You're getting this, the problem of being like a royal in England or something, you know. How fun. Now I was curious about that, how that works. And actually, I work with the Gobernación de Bolívar. In fact, they stay at my hotels and stuff when they come down. But yes, get everything from them in a contract, yeah, is what I can tell you. Everything. Now, very exciting. You got your Colombian nationality in 2019, and someone reasonably important, and very, very important, it was the person who handed it over to you. Tell us about how this came about. I mean, you applied for Colombian nationality, I assume.
Yeah. This might come as a shock to some of our listeners, but the process for becoming a Colombian can be expedited if you are in touch with the proper person. And so, I would like to say that I followed through diligently on the process of becoming a resident and then applying for citizenship, passing the test, learning the national anthem and all, everything that needed to be known about Colombia. But I didn't have to do any of that. Kind of like a Colombian thing. You kind of get in with the right people and you obtain your citizenship over the course of 3 months instead of 10 years. So, I'd been in Colombia and I'd had work visas and I was working towards my residency, but like you have to have 5 years of continuous visa permissions to obtain residency. And I just, one day I skipped a day on my visa expired one day. And so I had to start over from zero. So from that point on, I was kind of like, well, this is going to take way too long for this to ever be possible. And I had kind of given up on living in Colombia because I was just so tired of traveling in between the States and Colombia. And I'd actually made a video and it was on YouTube and I was just like, I'm sorry, Colombia, I got to leave. And turns out some higher ups saw that and they got in touch with me. And, you know, next thing you know, I'm a Colombian.
Wow. And the person who handed you over your documentation was Carlos Holmes Trujillo, nonetheless.
Yeah. It's ironic because I only realized that he was like, you know, a top dog in, you know, Colombian politics until later. Like I was like, who's this guy that's giving me my citizenship? So it was a very ironic moment. I'm sure he said the same thing about me. I cried when I found out that I was going to get it just because it meant so much for my career. And it also meant so much for my, you know, my state of mind, my tranquility, mm-hmm. you know, and it's the most amazing honor that has ever been given to me. You know, like I think that this, you know, if I ever get a plaque for 1 million subscribers on YouTube, that will definitely not, you know, compare to becoming a Colombian. That, I mean, I like words cannot express my gratitude. And it's like just the highest recognition I could ever get. I wanted it, you know, definitely.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool indeed. And of course, now Carlos Holmes Trujillo is the Minister for Defense. And, you know, in a few years' time, I imagine he'll be running for president again. So maybe you can pull out that contact for something in the future. Yeah.
I should have gotten his WhatsApp. I was just so nervous at the time, you know, I just didn't want to mess up my lines, but yeah, I maybe he'll remember. Yeah, I'm sure he will. I like to think he will.
But let's say that your videos got seen by someone or some people who are higher up in this sort of, I don't know, the society here. And they said, well, we're putting your name forward for nationality. Well, of course, this is huge, favorable publicity, favorable promotion for Colombia, too. I mean, they saw your YouTube channel, 921,000 subscribers. So this is, again, a huge deal. And you put it up there and there's the photos. This is, again, very positive image for Colombia.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, I think that now that I'm a Colombian, and you probably noticed this, like there's like a honeymoon phase when like you're first getting to Colombia. And I just think that for me was one of the most beautiful, like, times in my life when I first got to Colombia and I was just learning everything. And I just like, I don't think that there's a single person that comes from a capitalistic society, a consumer driven society, you know, these, I hate to use the term, but like these, first world countries. I don't think there's a single person that's from, you know, these places that wouldn't benefit, you know, a lot in terms of like expanding their perspective on not just the world, but on life and seeing how other people live and how other people approach life. I think that like, just about everybody in 2 weeks' time in Colombia could just have some like mind-blowing, you know, experiences that you know are so much more than watching a movie on Netflix. It would be something that like you know really can you know kind of like shake your foundation a little bit in the best kind of way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I've changed so much for the better having been here all these years. It's completely altered my sort of life view of things, my outlook on things, and the sort of work-life balance, family balance, and everything that I want in my life. I really do think it's, you know, I come from an incredibly small family myself, you know, driven, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm still driven, of course, but it's in a different way, I think. And I think you were talking almost as a psychologist then in that last bit.
Oh yeah. I can't help but like, you know, I'm definitely a way too analytic for a YouTuber a lot of times. And I think it's been a kind of like a help and it's also been a detriment at some point, but yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. I think that it's a, you were talking about being driven. I don't know what happened to me. I think YouTube kind of got in the way of that, but, I definitely have been changed by Colombia in ways that I wouldn't even know how to like exactly, you know, explain with words in like a short sentence. I don't even know if I could like tell you how I've been changed, but it's something that like, you know, it's like one of those things that like you just know it happens. You look back at yourself like 6 years ago and you're like, who is that guy? You know? So I think it's one of the things that like definitely has a lot of innate value that you wouldn't necessarily consider if you were just to look at it briefly.
I think, you know, you say that it might be a detrimental or a hindrance to being a little bit more cerebral on YouTube, but I think that's probably, you know, a success story. I'm not saying, you know, being pompous or being overly like wordy or anything like that, but it's, you know, I think if you know how to present yourself and your subject matter, you're going to appeal to a greater group of people, and that therefore therein lies the success. I mean, you know, if you're being incredibly intellectual and academic, then of course you're then narrowing it down to an even more niche market. So I think you probably know exactly what you're doing. On that note, do you produce all your stuff then? Do you do all your own editing and everything else?
I have done all of my editing on every video except for my music video, which, you know, if you want to have a good laugh, look up the music video Mi Latina, M-I Latina on YouTube, and put on the English subtitles. I wrote them in a hurry, and they're absolutely horrific and hilarious because one of the lines is like, I'm a gringo, but I like it spicy, which is not a very good translation of what the actual lyrics say. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that like you, I learned how to use Adobe Photoshop and Adobe Premiere to edit my videos. And it's one of those things that like, if you do anything every day for like, you know, a year, you'll learn how to have some level of proficiency at it. So it's like, it's one of those things that just like, it was in my favor to learn how to edit my own videos. I had a buddy who originally was showing me, was editing my videos at the very beginning. And then I was like, well, maybe you could show me how to do it. And he was like, yeah, please, because I don't really want to keep on editing your videos. And so it's one of those things that like, just kind of happened pretty organically. And I'm not bad with computers. So it was like one of the things that like, it just made sense to put in that time investment.
Oh, that's excellent. And now you brought it up, not me. Tell us about this song. It's on the top of your YouTube channel. I mean, Mi Latina. I liken it. And I have to tell you right now that it's not the kind of music I listen to. But I liken it to the kind of, it's got the tone and of course the lyrics of like a Maluma type song. Who's your inspiration for Mi Latina?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a fan of reggaeton. It's a popular urban music here in Colombia, and that's like Maluma, J Balvin. I've always enjoyed it just because it's part of the learning process, you know. And so it's like kind of like if I were to listen to reggaeton in English, I would not stand it for more than like 5 seconds. But because it's in Spanish, it has a different kind of value added to it. So I've kind of like at some level I've started to like a kind of music that I definitely wouldn't have if it was in my like, you know, native tongue. And I started listening to reggaeton like 5 years ago. I never really thought about making a song until I think it was 2017 that it became very popular on YouTube to make roast yourself videos, which essentially are videos where you make fun of yourself as a YouTuber. You give yourself the opportunity to like pick on yourself through a music video. And so my idea, my concept was to make a music video that was not a roast myself, just a music video on its own. That would be the precursor to my roast yourself. So my plan was for this music video, Mi Latina, to viralize to, you know, unprecedented levels and me to, you know, shoot to the YouTube fame and international communities through this song. And so that justified all the money that I put into it. I put about like $2,000 after it was all said and done into the production, which was a steal. But either way, I put all that money into it because I had these very high hopes, which didn't really realize. But it wasn't a failure. It's kind of like a funny story. And I have it at the top of my YouTube channels because in terms of visual quality and storytelling, it's actually the best work that I've ever done on my channel. So yeah. It's ironic, but yeah, that's my little music video.
It's a serious production. It's a professionally done video.
Oh yeah, no, it was. We had a nice camera. We had a smoke machine. We rented out a. There's a bar in Bogota that we rented out the whole second floor of. Or the whole bar for like a couple hours, and we had around like 15 extras. Like I learned a lot. It was a learning experience. It was definitely worth it. It's kind of fascinating. I would do it again, except for it was a very it was the opposite of profitable. I lost a lot of money on it, but I would do it again just for fun.
Very good. I like that. But I mean, you must have thought this would launch you into a different sort of category of YouTube as someone who said, yeah. Now I can sing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's like once you become a YouTuber, you realize that like YouTubers are only so famous. You know, it's like YouTubers are like they have followers, but when you're a singer or when you're an actor like that, that's when you're really famous and that's when you really like have like social presence. And so like I kind of recognized that 2 years back and I was like, well, let's give it a shot, see if I can transform myself. And so I couldn't. And so here I am. I'm still a YouTuber.
Very good. Now, let's talk a little bit about, I mean, okay, first of all, let's get you some, you don't need my promotion. I'm nowhere near. I mean, your website itself, lifeofzach.com. Of course, YouTube just put Zach Morris up in there and then Facebook, same thing. But your YouTube channel is fascinating. Now, I'm not going to say and not going to claim that I've watched all the videos. I just watched some to just to acquaint myself again. And you've got one video which I would like you to list the 9 things that Colombians do better than gringos. That's one of your videos and it's pretty popular. So what are those 9 things? Can you think of them off your head, top of your head?
Yeah, off my head, there's some things that like were like very evident, and then there's some that I was like kind of sitting down and brainstorming to get to 9 because 9 sounded like a good goal to get to. But like there's certain things that like you do realize when you first come to Colombia, and it's a very beautiful thing. Like it's something that I should have made this video sooner, but it's like, for example, in Colombia, like I've never seen a Colombian woman, like regardless of her it's kind of like without any intention of sounding sexist, but Colombian women are really good at conserving energy. Like every girlfriend that I've ever had in Colombia was like, yo, you do not leave the lights on when you leave the house. And like, that's one of those things that like, I don't know, in the United States, there's not this, the boomers, but like my generation, it wasn't really taught to like be very conservative in terms of like resources around the house. Like, you know, recycling water, and like I've seen this kind of stuff happen in Colombian houses where you recycle the rainwater, you use it to wash the clothes, like all kinds of resourcefulness that like it's just like commonplace in Colombia, and it just like it's not doubted, it's not questions, it's kind of like just like, well, we're gonna do this because it's better to save these resources. And so that was the first thing that came to mind. It's like in Colombia, like they're moving towards on solar energy very rapidly. And it's just like there's not any kind of debate as to whether they should or not. It's like even like what's the name of the energy producer here in Colombia? It's Eco Columbia. Yeah. What is it?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know.
yeah. Eco Patrol. Yeah. So they're actually like sponsoring solar panels. And it's like, you know, petroleum, solar, like those aren't, you know, necessarily obviously compatible. But like that was the first example. I guess another one would be like in Colombia, they just like sharing is a part of the culture. Like you literally don't open up a pack of chips in Colombia without like everyone getting like a handful, which is especially hazardous during times of coronavirus. But luckily, I guess that's kind of been the whole sharing thing is kind of like toned down. But sharing is like a huge culture of Colombia that just like, you know, is overwhelming. And when I first got to Colombia, it was just like overwhelming. Like I didn't even know how to rack. I was just like, wow, this is completely fascinating. And I don't know if I necessarily want, you know, to eat some of your chips after you've had your hands in the bag, but I guess I'll go ahead and do it because, you know, that's what people do here in Colombia. And so that was one of the things. Music, I guess the dancing is just a very integral part of Colombian culture. Like, you know, having rhythm, knowing how to dance. I need to do some homework. I'm drawing a blank. I'm not sure if there's any
it's
others
all right.
That I can remember. That's
all right. What and actually this next one is thinking about your and looking at your videos. This next one tethers quite well into last week's episode with Toby Muse, the journalist who's just had his book out called Kilo, and he sort of follows a kilo of cocaine from its being picked, the leaves being picked on the border with Venezuela by impoverished Venezuelan immigrants, and then all the way to its final destination in the U.S. And he spends time with the U.S. Coast Guards and everything. I mean, it's a fantastic book. Of course, it's about the cocaine trade, and now this tethers in very well is that you have a video which has again been very, very influential, and you ask, and I don't know how many they are, but because I watched the whole thing, but you ask a whole load of Colombians whether they had tried cocaine or if they planned to do so, and of course they all looked shocked and said, you know, to the negative. You know, I guess one day you woke up and said, I'm going to do a video for Colombia, but for Colombians, but directed at gringos.
Yeah, well, it's I mean, it's one of those things that, like, I'm not sure about how everyone arrives in Colombia, but I definitely arrived in Colombia and I was not thinking about like crazy cocaine experiences. I've never really done cocaine. It's not something that, like, I'm really familiar with that kind of culture. It's weird because I'm kind of crazy, but I've never actually done cocaine. You know, it's like I have like consistencies with the crazy tourists that come down to Colombia, but I'm not like all the way like into it. So like I didn't really have a concept of what cocaine was, like what the story was behind it. But as you live in Colombia, as you interact with certain people, you kind of get this, you start to paint the picture. And I'm sure that you guys talked all about this on the last podcast, but like, you know, like there's two sources of money. No, well, I guess there's three sources of money in Colombia, you know, imports, exports, working with the government, or, you know, the drug trade. You know, like that's like really what fuels the Colombian economy. And like, you know, I had an ex-girlfriend whose cousin was, you know, killed by working in the, you know, narco trafficking industry. And so it's like, it's one of those things that, like, you don't really realize how intricately it is linked into the Colombian culture until you see it. Having said that, Colombians are not doing cocaine, and that's the biggest thing about it. Colombians are opportunistic in the sense that they have the ability to produce a very resourceful, material that's sought out all across, you know, Gringolandia and, you know, Europe and everything else. And they just essentially are, capitalizing on that market. But I just hate when, like, I'm really offended when, like, people, because it happens. It happens a lot. People ask Colombians when they get to the States, it's like, oh, do you do cocaine or did you bring cocaine with you? And it's like, Colombians aren't doing cocaine, and it's a very few people that are actually producing it. Whereas those few people may wreck a lot of other people's lives, but it's a very, like, you know, limited, and it's limited, but at the same time, very deeply linked within Colombia. I guess it's one of those things that, like, you know, it's a very complex matter that I'm sure anyone that listened to your last podcast could probably understand. It's one of those things that, like, I felt like it was good to defend. It should be done. I don't know. I don't think it's, you know, Colombia's fault that there's a cocaine problem in the 80s in the United States. You know, it's like, you know, there was a lot of people demanding that from the United States, essentially.
No, and I think it was great. But obviously you edited it, but was there any one Colombian who said, yes, I've taken it?
Yeah, there was. Okay. He made him record again because he had a good camera presence, and I was like, no, just say no. But he was a music producer, and I was like, oh, well, go figure. I'm not surprised at all. Because
I was going to say, you clearly weren't going to the right places. I mean,
I'd never seen a Colombian do cocaine until like 2 years ago. But having said that, it's very popular in Colombia to have a beer. And like, you know, there's a drinking culture that's very responsible and not as hardcore as in the States, for example. There's not as much binge drinking culture, but like drinking culture is very accepted in Colombia. But like, it's select few crowds in Colombia that are actually consuming cocaine, because first off, nobody has not everybody has the kind of money that you need to spend on it. And second off, not everybody, you know, like looks, not many people in Colombia are going after that particular experience.
Yeah. Well, let's move on from that. But it's very good one. A good one. I mean, a good one, because like you said, he's like, Colombians go to the US. Oh, you bring cocaine. Yeah, I go to a pub in London. It's, oh, you live in Colombia. And then they sniff at you and stuff. And it's like, of course I'd move to a country because of that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's so boring to hear that kind of thing. And Colombians are sensitive to these things, of course they are, but you sort of we all need to help them turn the corner on this, and until there's some sort of international agreement and something else brought forward, I don't know what the solution is. I can't even possibly offer it, but you know, Colombia won't turn
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, they've told us Colombia won't turn this corner, and it won't lose this image until something else happens, and that's the truth.
Well, I think from what I can tell, I've seen a lot of people that are not Colombian get way more excited about cocaine than like I've ever seen a Colombian get excited about cocaine. I feel like it's one of those things that, like, you know, everybody loves to kind of glamorize things that they don't understand that well. And I think that's one of the things, is like people just, you know, they hear Colombia and they think about Pablo Escobar, and that's as far as their understanding goes of, you know, like the dynamics of cocaine in Colombia. So I think it's a lot of things that like traveling, like taking a trip to Colombia could probably like fix for a lot of people. And if not, I don't know, watching a documentary.
Yeah, definitely. That's fantastic. So what have you got in the pipeline? I mean, it's got to be hard at this time right now, in this lockdown, to be doing, uploading stuff to your YouTube channel. But what are you working on?
Yeah, it's I was really lucky. This past year, I was featured on a TV outlet on Caracol. They did a profile, like a 20-minute profile of me, and they made me look way, way better than I actually am. And so I actually got a huge burst of followers that were new and definitely, you know, interested in my content. And I was very happy, because I was actually, at the time that this happened, I was actually in Argentina, and I was making videos asking Argentinians what they thought about Colombia. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like one of these things that like it's very easy content to make, and it's very entertaining, and it's somewhat informative, and it kind of like, you know, closes borders down a little bit. So I had planned on going to the United States and making videos about what, you know, people in the United States thought of Colombia, and then interacting, like, you know, asking people in the United States, you know, to recognize the Colombian flag and stuff like that. And I'm at the point where like I'm kind of I've done just about as many ideas as I can think of in Colombia. Like, like you can only make as many videos that come to your mind. I think that my biggest thing is just like, you know, my plan for the future is to, you know, keep on making videos, keep on. It's one of those things that like, you know, you get a video idea. This past year, I like had an old TV and I gave it away, and that video, it went viral, and I never expected it. It's just like one of those things that once you get into the mindset of creating content and not really giving it that much importance as to what that content is, just making sure that it's good quality. That's kind of, I want to maintain that mindset, because, you know, when you come to think about goals, I obviously want to get to 1 million subscribers by the end of the year. That would definitely be a dream come true. But it's like, you can't be like, well, I can't like strive to make the most viewed video on YouTube, or I can't strive to, like, you know, have a very viral video. It's kind of the one of the things that just, like, you know, make it into a habit, make it into like a routine, and, you know, like, never stop producing, because at the end of the day, it's like, you know, you never know what's gonna work for you and what people are gonna appreciate. So it's kind of like one of those things.
This is true. Well, listen, Zach, what's the name of your travel company that's taking off? Let's say.
It's actually called Adventure Better. I have a website. It's called AdventureBetter.org, and like it's one of those things that I think that probably will be what I'll be doing. Like, you know, 10 years from now, but YouTube will definitely be playing a role in how many people want to travel with me and everything else. So it's Adventure Better. You can look up adventurebetter.org. And if you want to come to Colombia, I'd be happy to show you around. I can definitely show you a very authentic experience. I kind of get very excited about showing people from the States that. So that's my, that's my once my celebrity wears off, I'm definitely going to be investing a lot more money into that.
Well, congratulations, and I wish you all the best. There's that your neighbor's dog there. I wish you all the best. That's all right. If it's not your neighbor's dog, it's my dog or my child. all the best in adventurebetter.org. I'm sure, you know, with your knowledge, background, and, you know, background in psychology, you'll know how to pull this off. I mean, you pulled off becoming a YouTuber. 921,000 subscribers is huge, and thank you for taking the time for being on the show. If you Google Zach Morris, do not open the website that says Zach Morris is trash. It's not actually about Zach Morris we're talking to. It's about the guy who was in Saved by the Bell, that show.
Yeah, it's a very worthwhile distinction to be made. Yes, I agree.
I looked at it, I was like, hang on, what do you mean? Because I was thinking there, I could look that up and find some dirt on Zach. Anyways.
Yeah, definitely.
They are different. And so Zach is one of the...
Yes.
Our Zach, this Zach we're talking to, is, of course, one of the, you know, great promoters and publicists and, you know, favorable press for Colombia. So thank you for this, Zach, and thank you for your time, and thank you for everything that you're doing for Colombia.
Well, Richard, thanks for having me on the show, and it's been a blast, and also appreciate the work that you've been doing, and good to have you down here with me.
Thank you again. It's a real pleasure. Shout out to your dad in Kentucky. Thank you for listening. I've been Richard McCall, talking to the influencer and YouTuber Zach Morris. Keep an eye out, because this guy is going to get that travel agency up and off the ground, adventurebetter.org. Thank you for listening, everyone. This has been episode 321. We'll be back next week with more interesting people talking about Colombia. And bye bye.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger. Because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.